Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Harvey's Penelope Ford, Quang is Kip Sabian, and Adam Bomb is Joey Janela.
Hey, I'm ready. Right foot back.
Begins with a U, it ends with an A. Has a million yourself there.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. As the other Cultaholic lads are hunkered down in self-isolation, avoiding the outbreak of the virus we cannot say on YouTube, albeit due to lack of demonetization, as they hide away from the problem, we are here via our Ica Pro powered DeLorean, charging headlong into the problem without any concern for 6 feet of social distancing from the year 1994 in professional wrestling. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion, and now isolated from society, Thomas Campbell, coming from my isolation station high above the nation. I am with the bear who may soon very well be in a literal big blue bar cage, the head pen of Cultaholic, who is currently residing in the area where there is more coronavirus outbreaks than there are smiles on faces. He is Justin Henry. He is the head pen of Cultaholic, and he is off of America.
Wasn't self-isolation a Fear Factory song?
Ooh. I think it might have been.
No, wait, that was self-immolation. I'm sorry.
You pulling out the Fear Factory references this early on. Oh.
Well, I kind of like Fear Factory.
They were huge when I was a kid, when I was in college. Mm-hmm. Fear Factory were my boys.
They were your boys in college?
Yeah, mate.
They still had a presence in like 2003-ish?
Just about. Hanging on in.
Is that when they finally got over to the UK? You finally caught on to the whole death metal thing over there?
All Fear Factory albums were sent on a very slow boat from America, and they just arrived in 03.
It's very, very slow. It's like humanitarian aid that got dropped in eventually.
Speaking of humanitarian aid, I may be in need of some, as you may have hinted in the intro. I am currently on day four, at the time you hear this, day five, of self-isolation, hiding from the virus that shall not be named on YouTube. How are you holding up in all this, matey?
Pretty good. I'm not sick of ramen noodles yet.
What have you got stockpiled? Have you got ramen noodles? Ramen noodles? Because that's how they spell WrestleMania numbers.
Yes, WrestleMania chicken stock.
John, if you're in self-isolation, here's a good little project. Instead of Photoshop, can you write WrestleMania in ramen noodles?
This is the test of a really quality Photoshop worker.
Oh, come on, lad. What have you got stockpiled apart from ramen noodles?
Just a lot of non-perishables, although just like the ramen noodles, macaroni and cheese, other like frozen food dinners and just basic stuff, really. I have a drugstore about not even a mile away from me, and I have a pizzeria that's up the street from me, so.
Oh, mate, you're good.
And they're staying open during this whole thing, so. Yeah, I'm doing fine-ish.
You're good for the next 18 months, mate.
Pretty much. Although, I don't think it's going to be... I know they keep giving worst case scenarios, and I think they kind of have to, because you want to try to scare people to get indoors, because we saw that story of those assholes at spring break. Like, oh, we're not going to miss out on this. It's like, yeah, it's, you don't want to wish bad on somebody, but watching that video, you're just like, no, I wouldn't mind if you started coughing.
I wouldn't mind if you started coughing, you weirdos on the beach. Yeah, they have to give worst-case scenarios. I mean, I kind of wish that Dave Meltzer was delivering coronavirus updates. I feel like I'd be a bit more reassured.
Well, he'd still be in the first paragraph right now.
God love Meltzer dropping it. Do you know what? The Dave Meltzer Wrestling Observer newsletter is always a thing I try and have a read through on a Friday. Normally Fridays I'll be quite busy, so I may not have time to properly sit and digest it all. But this morning, waking up in isolation, I was like, I could sit and have a nice leisurely read of this today. I've got all the time in the world. I'm just going to leisurely read through the heaps of paragraphs that Dave Meltzer offers from the Wrestling Observer. And when I did so, Justin, I scrolled back to the year 1994 and went through the archives of the Meltzer's newsletter. And I have made some copious notes for today's podcast.
Oh, you came prepared.
I did indeed, mate. I am a Girl Scout. Justin, can you tell us, as we get into the ins and outs of WWF from 1994, for this episode of the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review, where and when are we?
Well, it is the final part of a TV taping in Bushkill, Pennsylvania. It aired on Monday, July 25th, 1994. It was taped 24 days earlier on July 1st.
Moldy, moldy tapings.
As evidenced by the fact that the now-deceased referee is still on the show.
That's so weird. Joey Morella, who passed away in a car accident, like, almost a month ago, still on these shows.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you tape well in advance.
It really is, and it's something that WWE are considering in the real world at the moment. But we won't talk about that now, because that's for the others to talk about. Some bits from The Observer from this particular year. It was on the 18th of July that two of the three charges against Vince McMahon, those relating to possession with intent to distribute steroids to Terry Bollea, were dropped due to no evidence tying in the alleged activity to the Eastern District of New York.
Yeah, and I believe it was the Friday before this show that this whole thing came to an end, did it not?
It did indeed. Vince McMahon was acquitted on all charges.
You know, Friday afternoon before this show, and we even get a couple references to that on the show, albeit very sly and cheeky.
Oh, I must have missed these, so I'm intrigued to hear them from you.
Yeah, I took a couple notes here on the few things the commentators may have said during the show.
Oh, okay. Well, I look forward to hearing those.
Well, I mean, it would look kind of bad if they came out and openly celebrated and, like, and had, like, party hats on and, like, yeah, Vince got off.
I tell you what I haven't had lately, steroids from Vince McMahon. And when I say lately, I mean ever.
Just, the whole show should have been like, there's, like, one giant IcoPro infomercial.
Lex Luger leaning into the camera going, IcoPro, it's all drugs.
You've got to want it. Like a pro, it's the shot in the ass you need. I mean, the shot in the arm you need.
I like that. That's a good joke. 10 on 10. From The Observer, also, something funny happened at the end of the barbed wire match on the 16th of July at the ECW Arena. Do you know where I'm going, Justin?
Funny, eh? Well, let's see here. I believe this was this Cactus and Terry Funk versus – I'm sorry. It was Public Enemy versus either the Funks or Terry Funk and Cactus Jack.
It was Public Enemy versus the Funk Brothers. Well done. 10 points to Gryffindor.
Oh, thank you. Funny thing that happened. This wasn't the chair throwing incident yet. That came later.
Well, there were chairs involved.
Oh, really?
Shall I read from The Observer verbatim? Okay. After a bloodbath with the Funk Brothers versus Public Enemy, which ended with approximately 80 chairs in the ring, Terry Funk wrapped up in barbed wire with a garbage can stuck to his chest and a brawl which went out of the building into the parking lot while dozens of the elderly were arriving at the building for their weekly Saturday midnight bingo session.
Tremendous.
What a night this was. Imagine your nan, your granny turning up to play bingo. How was the bingo, Gran? Oh, these men came out all covered in blood and barbed wire.
I've heard many stories over the years of old ladies who take their shoes off during those bingo games, like getting their feet stuck in thumbtacks. And
oh, no, really?
Because they were still on the floor.
Oh, my God.
I remember Todd Gordon, the former owner of ECW before Heyman bought the company, telling me one time that a lot of times during those bingo games, a lot of the wrestlers would still be filing out of the building. And a drunken Sandman would walk by and just yell bingo randomly, and old ladies would be mad because they thought they lost. And I realized it was just Sandman just being drunk and being an ass.
That's incredible. That is incredible. From this moment, this ridiculous moment at the ECW arena, this possibly, and you might be able to tell me otherwise if I'm wrong, this possibly might have been the first time that the crowd broke into an ECW chant.
They had been doing that before that. Well, I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say that the story ends, the article ends from Meltzer saying that the fans gave the wrestlers a standing ovation and chanted ECW, ECW.
I know for a fact that months before this, there was a incredible 2 or 3 minute match between Mike Awesome and JT Smith in the building. That was like one of the craziest short matches you've ever seen in your life. And Awesome went to dive off the top ropes, and the top rope just collapsed under his weight, and he just face planted to the canvas, and the crowd chanted ECW for that.
Oh, jeez.
So that I remember.
Okay, so maybe they've done it before. I was just intrigued that it might have been the first time because Dave Meltzer makes a point to point it out.
I'd say at this point it was becoming in vogue. This was the year the ECW really came into its own.
Ah, that probably makes sense then. Also, Antonio Inoki. Some Inokiism to drop on you for the Classic Raw review.
All right.
And Antonio Inoki is still making noises about putting together a match with George Foreman, who he didn't end up meeting in Orlando, he was going to meet up with in Orlando, Florida to discuss it, but it didn't apparently happen. Instead, Inoki had a meeting with Muhammad Ali. So we could be getting either Inoki and Foreman or Inoki and Ali in 1994.
I don't think Ali would have been doing much in 94.
He would have had some time on his hands.
Well, he was kind of ill at that point with Parkinson's.
Yeah, that's probably why Inoki wanted to pick a fight. And New Japan had a huge 5-night run at Sumo Hall. That a lot of people are saying was an incredible week of wrestling, climaxing with the G1 climax. Lots to celebrate on that show. I looked down the card and I was like, wow, there's some dream matches on here. But there is one particular crap WWF dream match that I think you and I would probably want to watch at some point. And it featured El Gigante versus Nails.
I've seen that match.
You've seen it?
It's on YouTube. Go find it.
Oh, all right. Well, find it. That's my job later.
It's as much a dream match as an outhouse is a dream house.
So that's a little dance around the wrestling world in this particular week. I will now hand over to Justin Henry, who will guide us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw.
Well, hang on. First, I'm going to see if Meltzer rated this match at all. Sadly, he did not.
Oh, that says it. That says everything.
I mean, on a show that had Riki Choshu versus Masahiro Chono, Jushin Liger and El Samurai versus Dean Malenko and Gran Hamada, Hiroshi Hase versus Shinya Hashimoto, and numerous other interesting matchups, you had El Gigante, a.k.a. Giant Gonzalez, versus Nails in a 3-minute match. That just sticks out like an eyesore.
It's one of them where it was very much a match that was described by onlookers as having happened.
Like, imagine watching Wrestle Kingdom today and all of a sudden, like 5 or 6 matches in, here's like Titus O'Neil versus Eric Rowan.
Mate, I'd pop.
You would and I would.
Just
some people don't have the same sense of humor as us.
Just us two doing some social distancing and popping.
It's like when Norm MacDonald tells jokes or does his non sequiturs. He knows that seven people are going to get it, but he's there for those seven people. And to amuse himself mostly.
Incredible.
So speaking of stuff that amuses only us, let's go to this Raw.
Yay!
Now, if this show could best be described as definitely hour three of a TV taping.
It has an hour three feel and an hour three crowd.
All the earmarks of it. And JR makes a funny comment about the crowd a little bit later on that we'll get to. But we start out with clips from last week of Tatanka confronting Ted DiBiase in regards to DiBiase having acquired Lex Luger. Tatanka's accusing him, or is still accusing Luger of selling out. And then we get footage from Superstars the following Saturday with DiBiase on Heartbreak Hotel to announce his new acquisition, Lex Luger. So Luger walks out, like when prompted, he just walks out when DiBiase calls him out. But before Luger can even say a word, here comes Tatanka to cut him off. You know, before he can even, you know, confirm or deny that he's the acquisition, and Tatanka tells him off. The next clip we get is Lex Luger in a studio setting, telling a camera that's trained on his face, Tatanka, I did not sell out. Now, couldn't he have told him that on the Heartbreak Hotel set?
That's what I'm thinking. I was very confused by how... okay, let's break this down. Luger comes out when prompted. Tatanka gets his face, tells him he sells out. And then presumably, we're looking at this as somebody, as people who haven't seen the episode. Presumably, Luger just walked off and didn't give an answer. Why did he come out?
Yeah, it's a pretty simple thing to say, no, I'm not with DiBiase. I did not agree to join forces with him. I mean, how hard is it that Luger has to go to the studio? Like, all right, guys, listen, I'm going to drive to the studio in Connecticut. I'm going to sit in front of a camera, and I'm going to give my side of the story. It's just going to be one sentence, but it'll be worth it. Trust me. It's like this all seems way too elaborate for what they're trying to accomplish.
It really, really does. And if you're a fan of this era, you know where this is going. And it makes the outcome even weirder.
It's a miscommunication plot that makes Three's Company look like Masterpiece Theater.
Well, that's it. It's true. Like, I love a good miscommunication plot. It is most episodes of Frasier.
And yeah, exactly.
I just think it's so easy to write, but this is like, this isn't a miscommunication plot. This is a misleading plot, which is different.
And it's Luger being docile for some reason.
Luger's just on dreamland for most of this.
He's on autopilot. He's just thinking, any year I'll be gone, it'll be okay.
Let's get to the fluffy white shirt era. I want to create a moment that Justin Henry and Sam Driver can talk about in years to come. I need to get around to it so I can have the opening episode of War Stories.
Shout out to Andrew.
Shout out Andrew Hodgkinson, the editor. My God, how rude am I? Andrew Hodgkinson, what a boy. What an editor. Sam Driver, fine voice, dulcet tones. Justin Henry, exquisite pen. A trifecta that has created a brand on Cultaholic that will live for many years.
I wish you said forever in the Terry Funk voice.
Forever! Forever! Forever!
How long's that? Jesus,
forever!
Dude.
I've got Voldemort, remember?
How long is that trash can going to be barbed wire to your chest? Forever! How long are those bingo players going to be emotionally scarred? Forever!
Picking out bingo balls. Legs? 11! 11! 11! John, if you're self-isolating, you have all the time in the world to do this. Terry Funk is a bingo caller. Thank you very much.
We don't ask for much.
I feel like I need to do these as airline tannoy announcements. So like, bing bong, call for John Eiley. Terry Funk as a bingo announcer. Terry Funk as a bingo announcer. Thank you.
You could lower your voice to like a golf commentator for the foreseeable future in order to save your voice.
And John, Terry Funk as a bingo caller. As a bingo caller. I need to learn to lower my voice because now I'm doing stuff in the office slash the spare room. The walls are very thin. And I currently have this dilemma where I need to do news videos early in the morning, but Alex is asleep next door. So inevitably, every day of our isolation together, she starts the day by hating me because I've woken her up because I'm in here shouting.
Oh, it's... I'm sure it has not diminished her love for you.
Are you kidding? She's livid, right? Because, bless her, she had freelance work booked in for next week. But because I've had now symptoms of Voldemort, I have to self-isolate. And now the ruling from the health bods of the UK is that if somebody in your household is self-isolating, you isolate with them. So she's off work as well.
Well, she's still with you, right?
Yeah, but only because you can't leave the flat.
give yourself a little credit here.
I reckon day 15 should be done. I reckon if I'm going to see suitcases being pulled out around day 13. We'll see how we go.
Best of luck to you. I'm sure I will be well.
Thanks, mate. If not, I've got a spare room going.
Well, speaking of horrors, we have this show here, which includes Atom Bomb versus Yokozuna and Tatanka versus Nikolai Volkov in a $10,000 challenge tonight. And that's when Savage informs us his take on Lex Luger, which is either he's telling the truth or he's lying.
What a guy.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
What I loved is when he said it, he said, like, either he's telling the truth or he's lying. And then he did a little dance, like his little Savage dance, like he was so pleased with his analysis.
I am logically consistent. And he gets down.
Either he's right or he's wrong. Dance.
That's a thing, the logically consistent shuffle.
Do the logically consistent shuffle. I do know what that means.
Well, that's logically consistent. Everybody dance.
I love Savage so much.
So we start off with our alleged main event, which is Tatanka versus Nikolai Volkov. If Tatanka wins, he wins $10,000.
Here's the thing, Justin Henry. Am I right in thinking that at this point, Monday Night Raw was still quite obviously a new prospect, so the wrestlers weren't getting a whole lot of cash in their back pocket for these appearances? I seem to remember hearing on OSW Review that the Undertaker in the first couple of weeks of Raw, when he made his first appearance on the first night of Raw, he got paid $20.
So if 20 may have been a little bit late, but
maybe. But if that's kind of near what Undertaker's making, like what the hell are Volkov and Tatanka making? They're definitely not earning $10,000 in this particular match.
No, and it's probably not the best thing to have DiBiase put that much money on the line when his choice of tributes here is Nikolai Volkov.
What are you suggesting? That Nikolai Volkov isn't good enough?
This is not the... If this was the Hunger Games, his district would be finished.
I volunteer as tribute.
It's the Dunder Games, as in Dunderhead.
Yes.
John, I want Nikolai Volkov as Katniss Everdeen.
yes please
So DiBiase bet 10 grand on Volkov because he hates having money. This is his plan to liquidate all his assets. Savage just gives us some expert analysis here by pointing out that Tatanka has a stronger tan than Volkov.
He is on the money tonight, isn't he? You know, normally within like the first five or so minutes of an episode of Raw, you know what kind of savage you're gonna get. And within 40 seconds tonight, we're like, we're getting the good savage tonight. He is pepped up. He is good to go.
Savage got pulled out of the strip club and realized, okay, I gotta go to work. I'll be back in about 45 minutes. Run over to do this slightly hepped up.
Just gotta go do a shift on comms. Back in a bit, lads.
Volkov with some plotting offense early, which would be easier if I just said Volkov has some offense early.
I feel that Volkov had some good trademark moves here. I can't even say that without lying.
Now, when you say trademark,
stomps.
You're telling me he does something that you're telling me something that he does something that nobody else does. Which,
yes,
I'll give you the running stomp.
The running stomp. The high octane Garvin special. The running stomp where he bounces off the ropes and comes back at the guy with a stomp. Nobody does it like Koloff.
It's the people stomp.
Oh, mate, it is the $1 million stomp.
Well, actually, back in the days of being the Soviet sympathizer, it could be the stomp of the people.
Nice. It is the stomp of approval. It is the passport stomp.
I like how you can't hit someone with a trash can, but stomping their head is not a hate crime, according to USA Network.
Oh, gosh. These weird rules and regulations the USA Network has inflicted on the WWF at this point. Hilarious.
So after Volkov takes a bump to the floor off of a dropkick, and actually a pretty good bump for a man who's pushing 50, DiBiase yells at him, and Savage accuses him of abusing his power like all bosses do. Everybody hates their boss to some degree.
Looking at you, Vince.
He forgot that part of the rant. So the match plods on, and the Tonga starts going into his no-sell war dance off the corner head slams. And then I realized something. Now, I'm not going to fault Nikolai Volkov, who at this point was probably about 20 years into his wrestling career and was pushing 50. No doubt he's not in the best shape of his life. What he does is he drops to a knee, and then he keels over.
It's like an archetypal Kane pedigree bump. It's where the knee is taking the love rather than the rest of the body.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand it. I hear taking bumps sucks. I mean, CM Punk has gone on that many times. He talks about how much he hated taking bumps, and I'm sure most wrestlers feel the same way. But it is just kind of a sign that this is a near 50-year-old man that's trying to wrestle, you know, a somewhat basic opening match for this show, and Nikolai's just seen better days.
CM Punk don't know what he's talking about, mate. I'll have you know, I took a lung blower last week and I'm fine.
That's one lung blower.
Although I did punch the guy in the balls. Apart from that, though, it was all fine.
I saw we got hit in the face, and I'm going to assume you deserved it.
Yeah, to be fair, I'm a bit of an arse at main event wrestling in the northeast of England, so I deserved everything I got that night.
Yeah, you do tend to provoke people.
It's good fun, though, mate. It's good fun. Oh, I love it.
How would you compare your bumping technique to Nikolai?
I didn't take the knee like Volkov did. I think the instructions I were given as a novice were probably the instructions that Volkov would have given me, which is, right, commit to the move and just hit the ground like a bag of you-know-what.
I think Volkov might be just a bit stronger than you are, though.
Just a touch, bless him. There was a good line in Tatanka's comeback from Randy Savage, believe it or not. As Tatanka came off the top, he shouts, "From the top of the Empire State Building!" Which is the tagline of Z100. And I'm assuming that Savage was a fan of the Morning Zoo.
Or he was just thinking of tall buildings.
He might have just been thinking of a tall building. But I'd like to think he was listening to Z100 on the way into the studio that day.
Yeah. It's like, why is the Empire State Building in Bushkill, Pennsylvania? I don't know.
From the top of the Bushkill State Building. I assume that's a thing.
Well, You could have said the Pocono Mountains because that's where Bushkill is.
Yeah, Pocono.
From the top of a ski lift in July for some reason.
So the match has your typical Volkov match finish where he goes for a slam and gets cradled. And the Tonga is now $10,000 richer. Why did IRS not run out and bash him with a briefcase and take 3% of the earnings afterwards?
That'd have been brilliant if IRS had jumped out and attacked him and just taken like a little wadge of that money.
Isn't that how it works? So Savage hits the ring afterwards because Savage has to put all these baby faces over by giving them some sort of rub from the commentary desk. And he starts taunting DiBiase because now DiBiase's got to pay up. DiBiase gets in the ring. He's a little hesitant, a little embarrassed because he bet on Nikolai Volkov because he thought the generals were due. The Tonga spinning the ball on his finger. John, Photoshop, you know what to do. That match was fixed. He had red hair dye for crying out loud. Well, actually, he didn't hear, so that's kind of a misnomer. But yes, DiBiase admits that Tatanka's a great athlete, but says Tatanka could not do the same to his Lex Luger as he ponies up the cash. Tatanka disagrees because he says he could beat Lex Luger. Out comes Luger. Tatanka reiterates his challenge. Luger accepts Tatanka's challenge, and apparently they're going to face off on some distant day.
Oh, the mega powers explode!
Sort of. So, we kind of one of the best parts of the show, and God bless Jim Ross. I was listening to his episode of AEW Unrestricted yesterday, and JR is still a great storyteller, an interesting mind, even though he may have lost a bit of heat off his fastball in recent years. But I love Jim Ross, and you know that. And,
oh, absolutely. We all do. He's a national institution.
Absolutely. But out of the break, JR kind of sells his soul to the devil here by saying, well, this crowd is in stunned silence over what just happened.
That made me chuckle, that did. But you know what? I admire the commentator that can take like a bum move or a botched spot or a weird reaction and somehow tie it into the narrative.
That is true.
Big fan of that. You don't worry about that in films, but in live theater, which is what we are doing here, darling, it's nice to see somebody bringing that together.
I mean, what was he supposed to say? Well, pardon us, folks. Our heat machine's busted.
Exactly. He did exactly what he had to do.
I would have admired him more if he'd said that. The Head Shrinkers versus Barry Hardy and Joey Stallings. Now, is it me, Tom, or does the Head Shrinkers tag team title reign and their babyface turn feel really ill-fitting by this point?
It really does. Like, them jumping the jobbers was very unface-like.
Now, why do they turn face again?
Because we needed an all-American tag team.
This is true.
And they were the best that we had. Wasn't the face turn Lou Albano coming out and saying to the Quebecers, like, hey, you want, I'm going to pick a team to face you. And to the shock of everybody, he picks the Head Shrinkers. And I think that kind of makes them de facto faces because they're teaming with Mario.
Well, okay. But I mean, seriously, Albano could have brought out any two individuals. He said, this is my team. And they're going to beat you, Quebecers. And all of a sudden, they're baby faces?
Yes, any team at all. Here come my team, Hitler and Stalin. Get out here now.
O.J. Simpson and Charles Manson. O.J.'s upset. He gets less letters sent to him than his tag team partner does. Less fan mail.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we got to cheer for him now. It's O.J. Mania. It's
it's running wild.
It's Manson Mania.
Or just run in.
Theme song's Helter Skelter backwards.
Oh, Christ.
Their main entrance is in a Bronco.
Oh, I'm here for this. I'm here for this.
Although, I'm not sure they could have slaughtered Barry Hardy and Joey Stallings any better than the Head Shrinkers did. Although, Barry Hardy didn't even tag into the match.
Oh, Barry had nothing to do with this. This is all Stallings taking a pounding.
I wonder if Joey Stallings was like a relative of Larry Zbysko just based on the name.
Do you think so?
What's his name? Stallings.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess.
I do got to say, I forgot Samoa and Fatu were even the champs at this point.
I'd forgotten who the tag champs were until they came out and went, oh, yeah. Forgot about them. But they baddies now? I don't know.
Well, no, because they have Lou with them. And, well, Lou was a babyface or a heel up until about 1984.
Weird decision.
So, Samu hits that badass second rope DDT on poor Stallings, which looks great. He keeps pulling Stallings up before the three count. Because, you know, they're baby faces.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out, according to Savage, that Lou speaks 20 languages. Doesn't say what they are. We just learned he speaks 20 languages.
Well, we know 12 of them are gibberish.
Well, that's true. When I recorded Bobby Heenan, Captain Lou refused to be fired.
Did he?
You know, that's Bobby Heenan's Hall of Fame story. It says, I worked with Grand Wizard, I worked with Freddie Blassie and Lou Albano, who refused to be fired.
I love the idea of them going, Lou, you're fired. No, I'm not.
Well, we tried.
I was doing some freelance stuff a while ago. It was unpaid stuff. It was years back. And I just ran out of time to do it. So I contacted the guy and I said, look, I do this job for you from home. Unfortunately, I'm getting much busier at the moment. So I'm going to have to wind this up. I'm happy to do the next 30 days for you. And then I'm going to wind up. And his response to me in email was, I'd rather that you didn't leave, mate. Oh, okay, but I am. Like, it was so weird. Like, I'd rather you didn't leave. Okay, I appreciate it, but I am. So,
did he follow up?
No. Well, eventually, so what happened was, I said, "Look, I'm very sad to hear, but I am definitely going." He rang me. He says, "Is there anything I can do to change your mind?" I said, "You can pay me." He said, "It's been great working with you." Thanks very much. We're still friends now. It's all good.
But the kiss of death right there. So about money, all of a sudden his car peels off. So anyway, poor Joey Stallings takes the double skull crushing finale, then the Samoan splash. That's it. Barry Hardy never tagged in, got paid anyway. Barry Hardy's a smart man.
He is indeed. He's staying away from that.
Gets paid his money, takes a minimal amount of beating from Samu and Fatu. Then we come to an oasis. We get good news, although it won't benefit us this week, it'll benefit us next week. On next week's Raw, Tommy, Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels.
Oh, shoot that into my veins.
And that's not the only great match we're getting next week. Oh, no. We'll learn the other one later on.
Yes! This next week, I'm so excited for next week. I'm really up for next week's show for multiple reasons.
Plus, it's live, so it's like, all right, it's going to be fresh.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
And now we go to the opposite. As we have two men here who are on opposite teams of the 87 Survivor Series. Jim the Anvil Neidhart versus Jim Powers.
Oh my god, they weren't they?
Powers survived that match.
Jeez! Powers was a thing back in the day, wasn't he?
He's part of the Young Stallions with current member of Pretty Wonderful, Paul Roma.
Oh no, of course.
So Neidhart still has Brett's old theme and it throws the crowd off. It's one of my favorite subplots of this period.
The fact that they're playing, that he's using Brett's old music.
Well, it was his old song too.
It was classic. It was classic Heart Foundation theme. Do you know what I thought when I saw the start of this match? And my brain had, obviously I'd learned something new when I watched this episode of Raw, because all memory of Jim Powers had been pushed out of my head. I'd forgot that Jim Powers was a thing, and I was watching this going, this should be the other way around. Jim Powers should be the talent and Jim Neidhart should be the jobber. Like, because when you look at the two together, like, if you just paused it and showed it to a non-wrestling fan, you go, who's the biggest star here? And they go, well, the muscly guy, obviously. No, he's the guy bouncing around for the big lad.
Oh, absolutely. And I wrote here in my notes, Jim Powers is probably happy Vince was acquitted.
Oh, God, over the moon.
it's like, there's, if this had aired during the trial, wouldn't this have been like Exhibit C?
Oh, I think it might have been.
I mean, they were trying to get rid of like everyone on at that point that had anything resembling a, shall we say, a cosmetic physique, like the Warlord and Hercules and Jimmy Snuka and many, many, many other guys. Hulk Hogan shrunk, and, you know, to make himself more aerodynamic. And here's Jim Powers looking like Jeff Cobb. I have a mercenary, John Moxley, and his name is Jim Powers. Jim Powers is Matanza from Lucha Underground.
Oh, that would have been a lovely little twist.
My brother, the monster, Jimmy Powers.
Comes out in like a comes out dressed as Gary Garber. Big power slam.
It's the Jason mask. We still have Crank It Up by Jimmy Hart. There's him something. So, Power takes this huge backdrop to the floor. He's willing to bump for a job at this point. And actually, they probably should have just brought Powers back. I mean, he could have done worse, right?
I think so. Like, Jim Powers looks like a star.
And you're bringing Davey Boy back, so obviously you have no umbrage about pushing guys who have muscles on top of muscles.
You got the Beefy Boys coming back through the door. Get Powers back in there.
Should have the Survivor's 87 reunion match. Yeah. You had most of the guys. You got the Hearts, you got Davey Boy, you got Powers, you got Nikolai. You bring Demolition back, the Bees.
Killer Bees. Twin Magic Killer Bees.
You sort of have Jacques at this point.
You could almost do that whole match.
You could almost. Although Meng's in WCW by this time, so unfortunately, he and Dina Bravo since passed on, so.
Nearly.
So Savage. I love Randy Savage. He has one of the most awkward segues ever into a comment he wants to make. You know how you want to say something, but you want to try to bridge it somehow? Which I've done on the show many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
So they're discussing the Hart family being at ringside for the Bret versus Owen match at SummerSlam. And Savage says, "Owen and Neidhart guilty of dividing the family. Unlike a friend of mine that was just proven innocent."
I missed that line. How did I miss that line?
I had to stop and listen to it three times just to get the verbiage correct.
Oh, God. That's amazing.
Now, in fairness, he wasn't proven innocent. He was just found not guilty.
Yeah, there is a chasm between those two things.
It's like when OG was found not guilty. It's not that he didn't do it. It's that they couldn't prove that he did it.
It was he didn't not do it.
Well, in the mind of the jury, anyway. And in fairness, if you read that full observer from that time period, because Meltzer was in the courtroom for the trial, taking notes and all that.
Yeah, hence why his notes are so comprehensive throughout this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And he even points out that, you know, the prosecution did a really crappy job of presenting their case. It wasn't like the WWE, it wasn't like Vince and them, you know, just got out through the skin of their teeth because they got lucky. Like, the prosecution just did a crap job. It was perhaps a more skilled case or a better prosecutor could have gotten Vince sent up the river, but it just didn't work out that way. So back to this match, Powers is fighting back. It doesn't last. Neidhart takes him down.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And proceeds to put him in the low-key dragon clutch. I was stunned because I read the results before the show. It said Neidhart wins by submission. And I'm thinking, okay, well, he used the Cobra clutch late in his career. Maybe that's how he finishes him. No, he puts him in. Okay, he's going for a camel clutch then. Then he adds the dragon sleeper to it. Like, when the hell did Jim Neidhart do the dragon clutch?
This is new to me. I'm glad that you're as confused as I was. I thought maybe I missed an entire period in wrestling where Jim Neidhart was suddenly a catch-as-catch-can submission specialist. But no, he just decides, oh, this is my thing now. This is my move now.
Low-key got the dragon clutch from Jim the Anvil Neidhart. I had to screen cap for posterity and put it on Twitter. I couldn't believe what I was saying. I was delighted, don't get me wrong.
Same, but it was still like, what is going on?
And delighted me just as much after the match was when they panned over a fan sign that said Heartbreak on it, which depicted Brett and Owen.
Nice.
But Brick is spelled B-R-A-K-E.
Oh, no. Unless they're talking about a car.
Or a new form of a heart attack, a heartbreak, because it stops your heart. Your heart stops on a dime.
Ah, heartbreak.
Should take that onto a Shark Tank and pitch it.
Oh, there's something in that, yeah.
So basically what you're saying is it's like it's a murder weapon. Well, yes, how much you want to put into it? How much you want to invest there, Mark? and then they throw me out. John, if you want to invent the heartbreak, be my guest.
John, get on it.
So after that amazing display of catch-as-catch-can from the Anvil, we find out another big match for next week's show, as women's champion Alundra Blaze finally gets a real opponent and will take on Bull Nakano.
Oh my God.
Is this Raw or is this a pay-per-view?
Oh my God. We don't know what we're getting next week.
Razor versus Shawn and Blaze versus Nakano on the same show.
Oh, jeez.
If you have never seen Bull Nakano and you're following along with Tommy and I, you're in for a treat.
This is exciting. I'm excited. Next week, right? Next week is stacked, okay? Because next week, it's myself and Justin Henry, and we're joined by a special guest, as we discussed last week.
Yes.
We are joined by friend William R. Washington from RBR Wrestling. And my God, Will has picked an amazing week to join us because we're watching Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon and Alundra Blaze versus Bull Nakano. Do you know what this is like, Justin? Do you know what this is like? This is like when you live with somebody and the house is, you know, it's not messy, but it's like it's slightly unkept and you know visitors are coming round. So you make sure that you tidy everything a little bit more than you normally would. And you like hide stuff away in cupboards and you just make it so as they walk through the door, they're going to look at something nice. That's what I feel like with the Classic Raw review. I feel like we get all these weeks of dirge, but now we've got William R. Washington from RBR Wrestling joining us and we're like, quick, let's tidy up and make it look presentable. Hi, here's our Bull Nakano and Alundra Blaze. Here's our Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon. This is what we normally have here.
No kidding. This is one special show because I'm reading ahead a little bit just to see what the venue was for that show. It's going to be in Youngstown, Ohio, which doesn't sound like much. The crowd for that show, 8,000 people.
Jeez, 8,000 people in Youngstown. It's better than, like, this tired bunch in Bushkill. I'm ready for Youngstown.
Although it does say heavily papered, but who cares? It's a big crowd.
Hey, I don't care if it's rock, papered, or scissored. As long as there's people there. It's nice to watch these wrestling shows and remember the halcyon days where there were crowds at wrestling events.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, that's going to be just like a basic, we'll call that a one-off, because once you're past that taping, it's going to be downhill from there. For a while.
Oh, God. Neidhart, by the way, incidentally, just to very quickly jump back to it, Jim Powers, you'll be excited to know, will get a shot at a major world championship by the end of this year.
94 or 2020?
94.
Okay.
In 2020, I'd be delighted. But in 94, he will get a major world championship match by the end of the year.
Which company?
I will spoil it for you. He will be facing Shane Douglas in ECW in November.
I don't even remember that match.
That was a thing that happened.
I mean, they were bringing a lot of outside guys for Shane to face, like Blanchard and Jannetty and Ron Simmons.
And Powers!
I didn't remember Jim Powers, though.
Powers was on it.
How about that?
I know, right? So anyway, back to the build to Blaze and Nakano. Out comes Alundra.
Jim Ross is here to interview Alundra Blaze. My first note to ever was, please let them be better than that King's Court.
Oh, do you know what? The only way is up from there.
Yeah, Blaze is dressed like Uma Thurman in Kill Bill, albeit with shorts.
It's a strong look.
It is a strong look. I'll give her that. It definitely adds to the badassness of her overall demeanor. She basically puts Nakano over as being really tough and really strong, because you build your opponent up. And if you've never seen Nakano, picture Awesome Kong, but possibly even greater. So then Luna hits the ring, because Luna's going to be here to basically manage Nakano, to basically speak for her. Luna informs us that she brought Bull Nakano to America.
Yes.
Easy for her to say.
Well, that was it. She burst out, as you rightly put there, sir, and said, "I'm the one that brought Bull Nakano to America," and then she ran away again. But you could tell that this rocked the confidence of Jim Ross,
who then also refers to Bull as Bull Nakano. Apparently, it's contagious like the coronavirus. I mean, Voldemort. So yeah, that's pretty much that. We just established that Bull is scary. Luna's going to manage her. She can't say her name, and now JR can't either.
they've all suddenly forgotten how to say Bull Nakano.
Boy, the wheels have come off this show that was already stationary anyway.
What do we think of Alundra Blaze's promo work, by the way? Slightly better than the King's Court?
Well, I mean, geez, she could have put a plastic bag over her head and suffocate herself, and it'd be better than that King's Court segment.
What do you think about the line where she says she will beat Bull Nakano because she'll beat Luna Vachon one day if she ever fights her again, because she has pride, dignity, class, and morals?
Nah, good enough.
It'll do. It was better than previous.
It was a very 1994 babyface line for this company.
Did the job.
And speaking of doing jobs, this next bit, I gotta say, most of the crap from this time period I have some frame of reference for. I remember a lot of things, even just vaguely. I do not remember this at all. We have an ad that's of the WWF Unbelievable variety. It's part of a Raw ad campaign. It's in an Italian restaurant with what appears to be the world's wimpiest mafioso sitting around a table. Just guys in suits having a big spaghetti dinner. There's a guy sitting at the head of the table who's apparently the Don. And he's like Brando, but like a dinner theater version of Brando. So then this... Are you with me so far? I think you're in stunned silence.
I'm just letting you tell it, because I think this is something else. But you're doing a wonderful job retelling it.
Over walks a stereotypical waiter, and by stereotypical, I mean his mustache is basically big, bullied, Busick thick.
It is ridiculous.
Vito, I guess it's like Vito, basically asked for the TV to be put on because it's Monday, it's 9 o'clock, he wants to watch WWF wrestling, wants to watch Raw. The waiter begins to tremble because I can't do that. We don't have cable here. So then one of the capos gets up and draws his jacket open, and you hear something metallic because apparently he's drawing a gun. We don't see it because that would be way too violent for this company that bans trash cans of the head. So the underlying message here is get cable in your restaurant or you get shot. And so the end of the commercial shows the Don, one of his top henchmen, and the waiter sitting in the back of the limo, and they're watching Raw on a TV. And what is it that he asked for? More bread or something?
Did he say, where's the cheese?
Where's the cheese? That's right. Where's the cheese?
Where's the cheese? And then the waiter realizes he's about to die.
And he's all out. He realizes, uh-oh, and he's probably going to get concrete shoot and thrown into the East River.
This chef was going to die, first of all, because he didn't have cable, so he couldn't watch Raw. And as soon as he announced that the restaurant didn't have cable, everybody left.
Well, yeah, cable's kind of a big deal in 1994.
But they were all expecting him to turn on Raw. So they're like, we're going. God.
That's why Luca Brasi died, because he couldn't put Raw on in that restaurant.
It's funny because it's true. Oh gosh, this was these adverts. Vince is writing these, isn't he?
How many times has Vince actually watched The Godfather?
I think Vince has seen the poster, and then pretty much thinks, oh, I get it. I'll make it Godfather based.
Puts a horse's head in Ted Turner's bed.
I'm sure Vince is writing these.
It's I get they're trying to be, you know, different and come up with tie-ins, like different genres in order to emphasize WWF, but this just feels so low rent.
Really? Oh, it's going to get – the rent is going even further down soon enough.
I'd rather watch the musical Rent.
Oh, if we were watching Rent, it'd be fine.
Well, yes, there's, you know, better songs. Actually, I can't even say that because we have Jim Johnson and his great theme songs here. So we go from a near execution to Yokozuna versus Atom Bomb.
Oh, so this, we built this up last week, didn't we?
Well, if by built up you mean we mentioned that two name wrestlers are facing off in a match, then yes, we built it up.
That's a build. That'll count.
Good enough. I believe this is going to be Joey Morella's last appearance on Monday Night Raw. Here for this match.
I'd be worried if it wasn't.
Well, if he was on next week's show, that'd be very impressive.
That'd be really, really weird and impressive.
One thing that's weird about this match is the ropes sound like they're about to snap. Did you catch that?
The what? The ropes are.
Yeah, every time Bond hit the ropes, you heard like a...
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether that sort of clicky farty noise was something at their end. I'm assuming some of this commentary's in post.
I mean, because it was every time someone ran the ropes. It was, I mean, not even Yoko, but Adam Bond was about 200 or 300 pounds lighter.
That's nerve-wracking.
Which gave me great pause when Yoko fell through the ropes off of a diving shoulder block and he just tumbled out.
That is slightly terrifying.
Yokozuna can wreck a ring.
Oh, he really, really, really can. This felt like a kind of a big deal. Like Yoko and Adam Bomb. This felt like they're sort of positioning Adam Bomb to be a thing. His music doesn't scream babyface, but I quite like it.
Yeah, it's nice, eerie nuclear winter music. The fallout of a bomb blast and there's nothing around you. And yeah, you could sell stuff to the kids at the merchandise stand. And yeah. So the crowd's chanting for Bomb during a nerve hold, so he's kind of over. I mean, 3 Mile Island ain't far from Bushkill. So he's kind of like a local hero. They go to the anti-nuke rally as his people, and they, you know, fight the protesters.
We're Adam Bomb's guys. We're Bombettes.
No, we're the Bomb Squad.
Oh, there you go. Were the fans officially called the Bomb Squad?
Wait, wouldn't the bombs detonate the bombs or disarm them? That's kind of weird.
What if you called the fans the Bomb Angels?
The Jumping Bomb Angels.
Well, that'd be a very specific group of people.
How very specific.
Yes, Norio Tatino, huge atom bomb mark. So this match, it's not terrible, but it's weird because it's like, on the one hand, it feels like they're trying to push Bomb as a single star, as a babyface. Okay, fine, he's a big guy, maybe you can get something out of him. But it also feels like Yoko's being pushed down. There's now a much lower ceiling over his head at this point.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether this was an attempt to build Adam Bomb or an attempt to demote Yoko. I kind of felt maybe this might have been an attempt to build Adam Bomb, but then again, when you see the conclusion of this match, maybe it does feel like this is a Yoko demote.
Yeah, definitely, because Bomb hits this pseudo DDT. The timing was very off on. Hits a flying clothesline, so he's going to town on Yoko now. But out comes everyone's favorite Puerto Rican ninja, Quang, and Harvey Whippleman. Now, if you're Yokozuna at this point, you're involved in an angle here. I mean, you're in the periphery of Adam Bomb's feud with Quang. You must be feeling great right now.
You are on the side as the mega powers explode! Adam Bomb and Quang! It's all over the love of Harvey Whippleman. I think that's the worst part, is that low-key, not really so much on Raw, this rivalry is for the love of Harvey Whippleman, because Quang is now Harvey's guy, and they were keen on commentary as Adam Bomb was making his way to the ring to say, like, Adam Bomb is his own man now, he don't need no Harvey. So it's for the love of Harvey, basically.
Harvey's Penelope Ford, Quang is Kip Sabian. And Adam Bomb is Joey Janela.
Quang does look like somebody from Norfolk, England.
He wears a mask and pseudo hammer pants and throws high kicks.
But yeah, as you say, Yoko very much on the periphery, but winning by countout.
Yeah, because Bomb just gives up on beating Yoko's ass and goes to the floor after Quang trips him. Bomb gets countout for beating Quang up because you got to protect Adam Bomb. Yoko wins on one knee inside the ring by count out. Yoko will not be a part of SummerSlam in any way, and in fact, Bomb and Quang will not happen at SummerSlam, even though it seems like they're building to that. So really, Yokozuna was background fodder for a feud that's not even building toward a pay-per-view.
Oh, poor Yoko.
This is not good. We get the SummerSlam report with Toad Petting Zoo dressed tastefully this week.
He said it's not going to be like a Yanni concert, although I'm pretty sure he said Laurel concert.
I forgot about that joke.
Thank you, mate. That is a joke from 2016. You're very welcome to it.
Was Todd's coat orange or blue?
It was green, because I am colorblind. That dress thing never worked on me because my eyes are broken.
Broken like Matt Hardy?
Yeah, oh, I wish. It's not that cool.
So we have the... it's sponsored by Domino's Pizza.
Say it properly.
Delivered by Domino's.
Thank you. Domino's is delivering SummerSlam.
The B-roll of that Domino's spread had me rolling for about 3 seconds. Not going to lie.
That was some nice looking food.
Indeedy.
Literally maybe we'll order pizza tonight.
Nice big garden salad in the middle that nobody's ordering. Give me some cheesy bread and I'm good.
Oh, mate, don't. I need to order Domino's tonight now.
So we got three official matches. We got Taker. We got Brett versus Owen for the world title inside a steel cage. And I just noticed this for the first time. If you look at the graphic, they photoshopped Brett's sunglasses over Owen's face.
Why did they do that?
I have no idea. It's almost as funny as when Kurt Angle was the guest referee for a match. So they had like a generic referee body. They photoshopped Angle's head on it.
Oh.
He looked like a Pez dispenser.
I can't get why these things happen. Like, the WWF, like, regardless of, like, now when it, even now during these trying times, it's worth millions and millions of dollars. But even, like, in the lean years, it had money to take a photo. Like, it's all those times when Triple H was the WWF champion in late 99, and all the photos of him with the belt, or him with his arms crossed, and the belt just badly potato-shopped over his shoulder. It's like, take a picture of the man with the belt, for God's sake. It takes 5 minutes. Yes.
Even if it's a candid, he's just walking down the street, like his eyes are all like crossed for like half a second. You get that, like, ah, good enough.
John, make a really bad Photoshop of Triple H with the belt.
Shouldn't be too hard.
Make it really bad.
And added to the show is for the Intercontinental Championship, Diesel defending against Razor Ramon.
Big card.
I gotta say two. Two out of three ain't bad so far.
Yeah.
And then, just to break my spirit, we get the first Leslie Nielsen spot.
Oh, mate.
Okay, so this isn't as bad as they would get, but it's still pretty bad. So here's what happened. Now, first of all, again, reiterate that Leslie Nielsen, one of the finest comedic actors ever.
One of the finest.
Brought a deadpan presence to some of the funniest movies ever, including Airplane and the Naked Gun trilogy. Now, he's had some duds, Wrongfully Accused, Spy Hard, 2001 A Space Travesty, but he's also had some great movies, the ones I mentioned previously, and Repossessed. Now, that wasn't bad. They bring him in to be the detective in his Frank Drebin role to figure out why there are two Undertakers. So this vignette begins with him dressed as Undertaker with the brimmed hat and the trench coat. He pans up slowly. We realize it is not Mark Calloway, but it is a near 70-year-old police detective. And he starts rhapsodizing in his deep Canadian voice. But then he gets scared because someone turned the lights out. And we hear Ted DiBiase laughing. And then we learn that Nielsen's a coward and is afraid of the dark. And it's to be continued.
What you're going to see over the next few weeks is the televisual equivalent of buying a top-end gaming PC just to check Facebook. You have the greatest, one of the greatest comedy actors on the planet at this time, in any time. And you are bringing him in to have stuff written by low-rent WWF writers and Vince McMahon. And I apologize if somehow this podcast is in the ears of one of those writers for the WWF at this point. I'm sorry. This stuff, because I know you would probably have to have it signed off by a higher up, by a higher power. It's me, Austin! but this is going to be bad. And you know what? I'm not angry. I'm just sad.
Leslie Nielsen, for those who can't figure out, you know, what his comic MO is, he's not supposed to acknowledge that there's a joke happening. He is so deadpan and so oblivious to everything around him that he's serious at all times, even when things are so silly and so absurd in his immediate vicinity. He doesn't acknowledge the joke. The jokes are happening and you laugh, but he's oblivious to it all. Here, he's way too involved.
That's the best way you could possibly describe it.
Yeah, I mean, here he's in on the joke, which is not a good thing for a multitude of reasons, because there is no joke. Well, the whole thing's a joke. It's the same criticism you see today of WWE, where you have all these great talents, and they don't know how to use them properly. They don't know how to use someone to their fullest potential. Well, guess what? 25 years ago, they had a fine comic actor, a world-renowned star in Leslie Nielsen, and they didn't know how to use him correctly.
They have no idea how to use wrestlers outside of the very thin world that they know. And there are times when that proves successful, but that involves a unique amount of stars aligning. But you don't have... That's why AEW is so exciting, because you have a whole fresh outlook on it, and you are having characters and people put in front of you who are just doing their thing, and you feel that. And okay, some of it ain't gonna land, The Nightmare Collective. Sure. It didn't land. But you know what? I bloody love the fact that they do stuff and they try it. And it doesn't
land.
If it doesn't work, they move on. And they did. They binned it off, moving on to something else. Mm-hmm. You know, there's stuff that works and doesn't work. And then if something gets hot, they capitalize on it. Like, they're not. It's not just the whims of one or two guys going, oh, well, this always worked. Let's do this. You know, this is this is the world of difference, and this is why AEW will do incredibly well.
There's a reason why the 2019 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards, that the top four for best on interviews were all AEW guys. Jericho, Cody, MJF, Moxley.
Absolutely.
Now, in most years, if all four were in WWE, well, the three who had been there before, Jericho might have finished top 10 for best on interviews, and he's won it before because he's Chris Jericho. He has some level of autonomy, and he's had it for years.
Mm-hmm.
Would Cody Rhodes or Dean Ambrose ever been top 10 best on interviews in any given year if they were still in WWF?
No.
And there's a reason for that. Not to say they're not talented, because they're very talented. They were just handcuffed and not utilized properly, which Leslie Nielsen is kind of a template, is following that template here.
So if you are a Leslie Nielsen fan, strap yourself in for a pony couple of weeks.
Start drinking.
Let's move on to brighter things. It's main event o'clock, Justin Henry.
Yes, between Dwayne Gill and Duke the Dumpster Drosy. And I'm happy because Gill's wearing a fantabulous pink tiger striped singlet.
Oh, he's looking hot to trot tonight, isn't he?
Oh yeah, this is a killer look. Like, if Dwayne Gill were ever on a WF game, I'd want this as like his DLC alternate costume.
I want to be able to play No Mercy as Dwayne Gill and press left C three times to find this. Just before his referee shirt.
It is a timely look, and when I say timely, I don't mean 1994, I mean 1981.
Yeah, it's of a time. Maybe he just saw, Jim Powers and Jim Neidhart going through their match and went, oh no, I'm in the wrong time period. I best wear my other trousers.
It's a good word, trousers. Very underrated word.
It's a great word, is trousers.
It's like, if they offered that single to a cast member on Glow, they would have said, ew, no. So the match is basically just backdrop for Jerry Lawler calling in. And they're still going on about that stupid trash can attack. Although Lawler does have a great line here, which I'm amazed he got away with given how puckered they were in this period, when he says, why did I hit him with a trash can? Because I couldn't find the baseball bat.
Great call.
I mean, that was kind of fun. Just like his, how venomous he was when he said it, because I think he meant it.
Yeah, I think he did.
So we find out that on next week's King's Court, Bob Backlund's going to be a guest. At this point, Bob Backlund is still the most white meat of white meat baby faces, but that's going to change in about a week.
Oh, is it next week?
Uh-huh.
Oh my God, next week's stacked!
No. That match is not on Raw.
No,
but Bret Hart for the world title.
No, but we start the shift.
Uh-huh. Because of this weekend on WWF Superstars, Bob Backlund is facing Bret Hart for the WWF Championship in a battle of the generations.
Oh.
Two babyface technicians going head-to-head in what should be a respect-filled battle of two iconic stars. And, well, if something happens.
What could possibly go wrong?
I have a story to tell you here.
Go on.
That particular Saturday, I remember like the back of my hand. I had gone out with my father earlier that day on a couple errands, so I missed WF Superstars. I came home in the early afternoon, and my brother told me that Bob Backlund had turned bad. We didn't know the word heel yet. Had turned bad because Bret Hart beat him, and he beat him up after the match. And I couldn't process this because not only seeing it, but I'm thinking, Bob Backlund's a bad guy? I mean, I've seen people turn bad before, but Bob Backlund? And even being 10 years old, I couldn't fathom that. But after watching where it all went, now all I think of Bob Backlund as is the crazy bad guy. It was one of those things where it's like, if it didn't exist, could you have come up with it?
It's true. It did come out of left field, and I love that. I love the fact of how left field it is, and I'm ready for it. My body's ready for it.
Bob Backlund's going to carry this show for the next 4 months. You just wait and see.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Yes.
Finally, salvation.
And you wouldn't have called it. You would not have called it in 94.
This is not humanitarian aid. This is them building a Moe's Southwest grill in the middle of the desert. That's really what this is. So Lawler's going on. Duke just beats Gilden to a pulp. Hits the trash compactor for the finish. And that's it. It was just fodder for Lawler to get his digs in.
Lawler gets in and then Duke Drosy gets over.
That's all it is. Mm-hmm. Nothing more, nothing less. So next week, Alundra Blaze versus, hang on, I have to quote this here.
I'm glad you wrote this down too.
I didn't write it down, but I just remember it. Alundra Blaze versus Bull Knocka 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 No.
Cheers, Savage.
Can't wait to leave. Was Shawn versus Razor in a rematch of the, what are calling one of the best matches in WWF history, and they are not wrong. Although there is no belt, no ladder here. But still, it's Razor and Shawn, so it should be awesome.
It'll be fine.
And of course, we'll have back on the King's Court. This sounds like one hell of a show.
I'm excited for it. I'm actually pumped for it. Like, it's as you rightly put it earlier on, this is an oasis coming up.
Oh, yes. This is don't get used to this kind of quality for Raw going forward. At least for the next couple of years, but this is definitely a bone being thrown our way.
Oh, I'm excited. So next week, all of that, plus special guest William R. Washington from RBR Wrestling is going to join us as well. Nice to have a new voice on the Cultaholic Classic Raw review, sir.
Oh, definitely. It's always good to have different people in here, just different perspectives, no matter what age they are, what they're viewing, how long they've been watching this. Always fun to have just someone different on here.
You can tweet him at William RBR. Go and say hello. Until next time as well. He is at JRH Writing on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. We will see you next week. Stay safe. Wash your hands. I don't know what that means. Knocka, 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 no. Love you. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.